Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Mondays with Mindy. Say hi to everybody, Christian.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show.
Today's episode features a conversation with producer, writer, actor, and director, Will McCormick. Born in New Jersey, Will graduated from Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. He quickly began working as an actor in dozens of films and TV shows, including The Sopranos, Brothers and Sisters, Dirt, and even had a recurring role in Plain Sight, which starred his older sister, Mary, or one of his older sisters. While performing in Paula Vogel's Pulitzer Prize A Long Christmas Ride Home, Will won the prestigious Lucille Lortel Award. In 2012, Will partnered up with Rashida Jones to write the Independent Spirit Award-nominated film Celeste and Jesse Forever. Solidifying their partnership, they formed the production company Latrain Train to produce many other projects, including the hit show Claws on TNT, and will be going back into production soon on AMC's new series, Kevin Can Bleep Himself, Use Your Imagination, starring Creek Emmy Award-winning actress Annie Murphy. As a writer, Will has continued with projects like Toy Story 4, A to Z on NBC, and currently he is adapting the novel Challenger Deep for Disney Plus. He recently completed the most beautiful animated short film, If Anything Happens, I Love You, which he co-wrote and co-directed with Michael Govier, a mutual friend of ours who's also at the BGB studio. It's a film about parents grieving the death of their daughter killed in a school shooting. The film has been so well received in dozens of film festivals and will be coming to a streamer very soon. And in my humble opinion, mark my word, will win and should win the Oscar in its category this year. I've been privileged to watch and work with Will in class, and however talented a creative, and he is as a writer and producer, I can say unabashedly that Will is one of the most talented actors I've ever seen, period. He lives in Los Angeles with his wife, actress Emily, and their son.
Awesome. I am excited to meet him. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome to the show, Will McCormick.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello, gorgeous.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here with you guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Very happy to see your face and upper torso. So we start each podcast just randomly grabbing five questions that Christian and I came up with, like 20 questions.
Okay.
And this way we just start gabbing.
Yeah. Truly. We'll get to know you kind of thing.
And then we'll get into it.
I have not been fed the questions. I just want to tell the audience.
No, you have not. I have barely. How did where you grew up, or did it, influence your creative aesthetic?
It's a great question.
So did it?
I mean, inexorably, yes. I think it informs everyone in some way, whether they're conscious of it or not. But I grew up in New Jersey, in Plainfield, New Jersey, exit 131 on the Parkway and 10A on the Turnpike.
That means a lot to an East Coast guy. I could tell you.
Right now. Totally. You know. And from a hill in my neighborhood, you could see New York City. And it was this green light on Daisy's Dock from The Great Gatsby. I mean, it was like this thing that was out of reach, but I sort of knew at a very young age that I had to live in New York, that it was like calling me and calling me. And I also, one of my earliest memories of New Jersey was, I got to get out of here. And now that I'm older and in the middle of my life, I love where I'm from. But as a child, I couldn't wait to get out of there. And I love it because people from New Jersey are very direct. And where I grew up is very blue collar. And what you see is what you get. And there's an authenticity there that I love and I'm so proud to hail from there. But as a kid, I was dying to get out there. And one of the ways that I dreamt of leaving was just going to the video store every single day and renting every single foreign film I could find. But, you know, part of being from New Jersey and living in sort of like the armpit of one of the greatest cities in the universe, it gave me a lot of desire and it gave me a lot of aspiration to know that like I wanted to move to the big city and then just get crushed by New York.
Not completely crushed. Come on.
Rushed.
Oh, no.
But I think growing up in New Jersey was really informative. It gave me a sense of self, of who I am and where I'm from. But it also, I could literally see Manhattan and I knew that it was there and I knew that it was calling.
Okay, so I kind of just have to ask. I'm going off script. Why foreign films?
Well, I've always sort of been a Francophile, and I just love imagining and seeing a place that I had never been. But I also think like French actresses too.
Makes sense.
So Italian actors for me.
Yeah. It's like, who's Juliette Binoche? She's amazing. Yeah. She doesn't live here.
I like watched Rafifi like 5,000 times. Okay. So like, basically I think I a little R, but like to myself silly to like the actress in Rafifi the first time. So anyway, my parents now are just going, what? Will, what's your favorite place in the world and why?
This is going to sound really corny, but it's true. My favorite place in the world is wherever I'm with my son.
Oh, not corny.
Especially right now.
Yeah. When my son was born, it was psychedelic joy. And I don't remember who said this. I read some poem. I wish I could cite it. But when the doctor put the baby in this woman's arms, she thought for the first time suddenly, oh, this is what my arms are for.
Oh, gosh.
The baby, his name is Sonny. When they put him on my chest for the first time, I felt like, I don't know. I mean, to be really honest with you, I guess I had like a lot of like, I just didn't know if I was ever going to be a father or if I was equipped. And the moment I met him, I felt like I had always known him and I felt like I could take care of him and I felt like I was ready for the job. And so it's wherever I'm with my son.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Did anything, attitude or mood change when Sonny was put on your chest? Did you have any flashes at all of your dad?
So many. You know, becoming a father gave me a completely newfound respect for my own dad. You know, when I was born, my father's father died a couple weeks before I was born. So for him, it was this incredibly heavy and light moment in his life.
I'm sure.
Yeah. But it made me rethink fatherhood and what it means to be a son. And it's the heaviest and lightest moment of my life.
Yeah. What's the last thing you binged on?
The last thing I binged on...
Doesn't have to be TV.
Yeah, right?
A lot of TV during the pandemic.
Yeah, of course. Is there any one or two things that really, you know, you were so thrilled you got to binge on them that moved you?
I don't know if it moved me, but like 90 Day Fiancé is drugs.
Oh my gosh. You're like my fifth person in my... has said that. Yes, I understand that.
It's drugs. I mean, I can't get enough. And I don't do drugs anymore. So I go to shows like 90 Day Fiancé to like get fixes.
Yeah. I do have to say my current obsession right now, if you haven't watched it, is Ted Lasso.
Oh, on Apple TV?
Well,
with Sudeikis.
I thought of you twice. I don't know why. I thought of you two specific times. I thought of you when I was literally binging. I watched the whole thing in 2 days because I could not stop. It's probably one of the best things I've seen in a good 2 years.
Wow.
I'm going to check it out. I haven't found my flow on Apple TV Plus, but maybe that's my entry point.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And Great. Anybody out there, like run and sit.
That's a good endorsement because you don't typically endorse quite like that. So,
you know, I don't, right? Yeah. Like I actually reached out to Jason Sudeikis and I don't do that either. Like I'm not a reacher outer, but I was just like, okay.
You know what though? I think it's great to reach out.
Totally. It's hard.
It's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it when someone says something nice to me and I'm a fan, but I really just, enough said, everybody watch it. That's all I have to say. Yeah. I thought of you and I think you might know why I did twice. Okay.
We're late to the game, but my wife and I have started Downton Abbey, which everyone in the world has seen but us. But that is such a soothing show for a pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're slowed down, you might as well watch something. It's like, to me, it was like reading a good, you know, nonfiction book about that time. Like,
yeah, just, totally.
Yeah. Gel into it.
Yeah.
When was the last time you cried?
My God. I mean, all I do is cry.
I love that about you, by the way.
Oh, so much crying.
It's so healthy and good.
Yeah. The last time I cried was probably, you know, it's a lot about my son, but I think just a moment with him, it was a joy cry of like seeing him see the ocean for the first time. And
oh,
we've been sort of locked in the house and in our neighborhood. And we all got coronavirus tested. And to see him on the beach with other little boys and girls who were about his age and to see them just interact with each other. And it felt like, oh, this is like what parenthood feels like, to see your son happy. I was just like overwhelmed because we haven't had a lot of that. Like, he has no friends. We're sort of inside the house.
Of course.
So incredible to see him see the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, how magical.
How old is he, Will? Will?
He's 13 months.
Oh, so he's really like discovering everything at the moment.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And he's becoming a boy.
I remember Ocean. I mean, Ocean's everything to see it because it's so unusual and huge and the sounds, the smell, like everything. Assaulting your senses. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pneumatic. It's spiritual.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your best habit and what is your worst?
My best habit is I'm super dedicated to my work and I am really regimented about schedule and I'm assiduous and I love to work and I have no problem working and I don't believe in writer's block. It doesn't exist. I just push it away and I show up every day to do my work and I love it. And I think I show up with open arms and an open heart and I've had a problem judging myself in other areas of my life. But when it comes to writing, I'm very kind to myself and open and I'm about the growth and I'm about the process. And I have very good habits as a screenwriter.
Do you think that's one of the reasons you're so prolific?
Thank you. I don't know.
You are.
Thank you. I mean, I think that this business, I mean, writing is actually the easiest part of my life right now.
And wow.
By no means Robert Towne, but it is a craft and I have been doing it for a long time now and I do know how to do it and I don't feel like I'm faking it, which is a great feeling.
Yeah, huge.
Huge.
But the truth is, I think it's endurance. Like I have good scripts and bad scripts. I have good years and bad years and I just keep going and I'm pretty vigilant about my work ethic. My worst habit is I'm totally addicted to nicotine and I go on and off Nicorette and like I'm sober in every area of my life, but it's when I do get stressed, I sometimes chew Nicorette.
Okay.
It's a bad habit.
Well, back to there's grosser, to be quite frank with you, but back to your best habit. It's so interesting that you said that because I feel that as an actor, very much so. I feel the same way. It's a joy to do it. There's good years, there's bad years, but I keep doing it and practice. And yeah, I mean, that's fascinating. I've never really heard someone talk like that about writing, except maybe the fact of like sitting down and doing it every day, but not in the creative way that you talked about it, which I like. Do you think that comes from starting out as an actor? Or no?
I think it has something to do with that. To be honest, I think I'm so grateful to make a living doing what I love that's sort of my baseline. And I don't want to take that for granted ever. I mean, if you had told me that I would live in Hollywood and work in movies and, you know, be doing a podcast with you guys and talking about my work, and I would not have believed you. So I do pinch myself. I mean, I'm very, very lucky to make a living doing what I love to do. I'm very fortunate. I'd never take that for granted.
Same. So it's interesting because I feel like you did talk about the creative process. So one of the reasons, I don't know why Christian and I started this podcast, but one of the things that was happening to me in quarantine or safe at home, whatever you want to call it, the one thing that I just really missed that there was no other substitute for was talking to other creatives. And I am not, which is why writing has never been appealing to me. I work well with others. I work my best and I feed off of and inspired and find other creatives of all other kinds, aspirational. And it's necessary for me. There's nowhere to get it. Old movies kind of did it for those first couple of months, but then it was over. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to talk to other, I missed finding people and whether it was through work or class or somewhere else, talking to people about their creative process. So if someone were to ask you, what's your creative process? As you define it, what would you say?
First of all, I feel the same way as you. I crave and need that creative energy from other people. And I think that that's what makes one successful is that ability to collaborate. This business, you cannot be a solitaire. You will work with other people. And I think that your success in a large part is based on your ability to work well with other people. If you want me to be really honest about my creative process.
I do.
I think there's a dollop of fear of I don't want to be fraudulent in any way. And I want to, you know, everything that I'm doing for the most part, generally, I'm trying to do stories that matter. And I'm trying to tell stories that are meaningful to me. And I don't know that I'm even that virtuous. I feel like that gives me the best opportunity to have a good career because I think people want stories that matter. Quincy Jones once told me the reason why he has so much money is that he always did what he loved. And I'm sort of try to keep that as like my North Star of like, if I love this and I connect to this, the proof is the pudding, right? There's no way that this can be bad because it will be true. And if it's true, it will speak to someone. So my creative process is there's three rules to screenwriting. Nobody knows what they are. But I know that for me, it's getting to the center of a story. And sometimes it's a battle. Sometimes it's a war. Sometimes it's a dream. Sometimes it's an accident. But usually it's about commitment. And it's about showing up and being available and getting out of your own way and knowing that these ideas are channeled through you, not because of you, but through you. and staying open to that process.
Okay, well, so I have to say, full disclosure, that we met in BGB Studio in a class, which I hate to call it a class, because it's really like what it says. It's a workout, right? That's how I feel about it. I have to say, and I truly just want not only you to know, because I think you know me and my heart, but to the listeners out there, I'm not blowing smoke. You truly are one of the best actors I've ever seen.
Oh my God.
Ever. And I say that not with a jump back kiss myself that I've been around like every amazing actor, but I've been around some pretty friggin' amazing actors in my whole life. And you're up there, Will.
Wow.
And it sort of, when you first came to class, I just thought, where have I seen him before? Because he should just be, I mean, was it getting an award of some kind? You're that good, I think. And I'm just wondering, because you've had so much success as a writer and a producer, does that call you anymore at all? Do you do it just for exercise and emotional whatever? I'm just curious.
If you ever call me to work with you in any capacity to act, I will be there in a heartbeat.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's going to sound like I'm waxing your car, but I feel the same about you. You are so gifted and you approach the work in such an open, authentic way. And you were such a leader in that environment. And I drafting off you because I'm such a fan of you and how you approach the work. So thank you. I don't really act that much anymore. And I go to class because I love actors and I love acting.
Right.
My wife's an actor. My sister's an actor. My best friend's an actor. And I just love actors. And for me, I want to stay connected to that because those are my roots. And I think acting and writing and directing, all of that are in the same cookie jar.
Yeah, storytelling. Right. Yeah.
Totally.
Without question. But I just wonder when you have what you have, I wonder if there, and I don't live in it. Okay. I'm not living in your body or your psyche, but I wonder if there are moments where you're like, I got to do this. I got to get back on stage or in front of a camera, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Do you have it at all?
I do. And I think I'm admitting it now to you out loud. Yeah, I do.
Good to
I
you.
Do. Ugh. Yeah. I mean, you know, in the course of the business, I think acting sort of like broke my heart. And then I got a couple breaks as a writer and I was getting meetings and sort of opportunities as a writer that I wasn't getting as an actor. And I sort of like turned my back on it. And I don't think it was wholly a healthy breakup. Do you know how I arrived at BGB?
No.
I did a little bit of writing on a big Disney movie.
Yes.
I did a couple weeks on a movie.
Yes.
And the director really liked me and she was like, oh, you're funny. And she asked me to come do a couple days on the movie.
Wait, as a voiceover?
No, as an actor.
Oh, it was live action. Oh, okay.
Yes, it was live action and like a big movie with hundreds of people and four cameras. And it was one of, I don't know if you've ever had this. I would love to know. But like I was in my trailer in the morning. I had like a 6:30 call and I was supposed to work at 7:30 and the day kept going and the day kept going. The day kept going. I was drilling coffee in my trailer and also writing. And I remember they finally started calling me to set at sunset. And I had this feeling of, how do I get out of here? Like, how can I get to my car and not go to set? And I had a panic attack, which I've never had in my life. I mean, I pitch movies extemporaneously. I'm not bragging. So I'm walking to set and they're miking me and I'm broadcast news flop sweating, thinking like, there's no way. I don't want to be looked at. I want to get out of here.
Wow.
Four cameras, one on a crane coming down for my coverage. And the camera came and I just drew a blank. And I got through it because I have a lot of experience, but like I butchered my way through the work. And I kept thinking, what does this mean? What is this? I do sort of now attribute it to coffee, but I called a friend of mine and I said, I need a really good acting class because I feel like I have some feelings there that I need to explore. And I kind of want to know what happened. And I do think at the end of the day, it was caffeine. But I also think, as you know, in that class, you just get very comfortable and it's about doing reps. It's like going to the gym as an actor. And I was like, I want to feel. So I also think that's why I go
always
to that
ready.
Class. Always ready. Like if someone does call me, I want to be able to go and feel like I'm connected to it and not because I didn't feel like I was in it because I hadn't been. I hadn't been studying.
Right. Well, I always tell people when they ask me, you know, difference between television and film. I'm like a theater person. I'm the most comfortable on a stage. I am never nervous. I am excited. Cloris Leachman taught me that. She said the same physicality you have when you're nervous is also excited. Am I correct? And she was. And so, but on a film set, I am the most nervous because for me, I always feel the least prepared because of all the waiting. So it's like you shoot your adrenals out trying to like, you know, so that is much of an art form to me, being staying ready in the waiting than anything else. But I just want to say sheer talent and emotional vulnerability. And I don't know the je ne sais quoi that somebody has where you want to watch them. You just have that for me. You are one of those people that I just really want to watch. And you move me. So I just never want you to ever say to me, just lie blatantly. If you just never want to act again, just lie to me.
I do. And I'm not lying.
Okay. That makes me so friggin' happy.
Thank you.
And it should to all of our listeners, because it really, yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Thank you.
So as far as, and we'll get into the new film, which I am such a huge fan of, the animated short that's kind of up front and center, along with your other couple writing projects too. But before that, what is inspiring you right now? Okay, take Sunny out of it.
Okay.
But what inspires you right now?
I'm watching a lot of music-based films because I'm writing a music film. So I've been watching Walk the Line. I watched A Star is Born, all of them. I watched 8 Mile. So I'm watching a lot of music-based films. So when I'm writing something that's sort of in the zip code of something I'm working on, I sort of tend to watch everything in that universe to see things that inspire me and things that I don't like and things that I would maybe try differently. I mean, I just watched Walk the Line, and I don't know if you've seen it really recently, but Joaquin Phoenix's performance in that movie is absolutely breathtaking. And he does feel like he's dialed into some other sort of planet on his work.
Agreed.
I mean, it's truly remarkable. But yeah, I've just been watching a lot of music-based films.
Okay, so I know I'm being a little bit of a tangential Trudy. What do you want to say?
I've also been reading a lot of Sharon Olds poetry, and I was obsessed with poetry in college. And then I just heard her recently recite a couple poems, and I've been going back to poetry too. But yeah, I mean, I was an English literature major in college, and all I used to do was read fiction and novels. And you get away from that a little bit as you get older, because you start reading screenplays and it becomes a job. But I'm really trying to get back to reading. And it takes a little bit of work to become a good reader again. I just got rid of my phone.
What does that mean? I know logically what that
means. What does that look like?
Are you not texting? Are you just emailing?
I have a phone. It's called a Lite Phone 2. This is not a commercial, but it's just text, calls, and GPS.
That's fantastic.
Thanks. I was at the beach with a friend of mine who doesn't have a phone. He's got like a flip phone and lives in Topanga. And every time we weren't doing something, he was reading and he looked really happy. And everyone else was sort of on their phones. And I'm checking like Laker scores and, you know, like just such a waste of time. So I'm going to try to go without a phone for the rest of the year and hopefully I'll read more.
Okay. I love that for so many reasons, because I'm just being a ridiculous conversationalist. I just miss that. And people just seem to just not even want to do it anymore. Or, you know, everyone's the one trick pony. It's either politics or sports. Like the art of conversation is lacking, and I miss it because I'm a gabber and I like it. And it's how I learn. It's my favorite thing to do.
I do too. I take my son for walks in the morning and we talk to everybody in the neighborhood. My wife's saying, how do you know all these people?
Okay. So yeah. So that's the sociologist in me, I think, that I just like peoples in that way. Yeah. Okay. Let's tangential Trudy a little and just jump into If Anything Happens, I Love You.
Yeah.
Talk to me about how you and Michael came upon this, decided to do it together. Just give me the beginning, the middle, and then I'll join you at the end.
Okay. If Anything Happens, I Love You is a short animated film that I made with my super talented friend, Michael Gobier, our friend, who's a brilliant writer and director. And we all met at this class, and we're both writers, and we would meet and talk about ideas. And he had this beautiful kernel of an idea, which I just loved, which is, what if our shadows and souls sort of represented feelings that we couldn't reach? And I thought, God, that's such a beautiful idea. And often I find great ideas are sort of a pastiche of a couple. So, you know, we were reading the news like everyone, and there are these school shootings, which are horrific and then happen again and again and again. And one is too many. And we just sort of felt like, I'm sort of obsessed with grief and how people overcome grief and face grief and endure grief. And what are the gifts of grief? But I thought, what if we could write a film about this sort of insurmountable grief of losing a child? And there was this sort of Korean proverb that we taped on our corkboard, which was, when a parent dies, you bury them in the ground. But when a child dies, you bury them in your heart. We talked to men and women who had lost children, and we partnered with Everytown for Gun Safety. And we just started building this film. We found a great producer, Marianne Garger, who was the captain of our ship, and there's no way we could have made the movie without her. The film was made possible by Gary Gilbert, one of the producers on La La Land, and we just had this incredible team, and we just started building it. We found a woman who is Korean, who was a recent graduate of CalArts, this woman, Young Ran No, and
gorgeous work. Oh my gosh, Will.
So the movie is super, super spare, lean, parsimonious 2D animation, and that was our goal because we wanted the film to feel lean and barren, like grief can feel. And we just started building it and we finished it, which is a real achievement for any film, but especially one that we really was truly independent. Mm-hmm. And we have won a bunch of festivals and we're playing in festivals everywhere. And soon we will be coming to the entire world.
Yes, I know that. And I also said in the intro that I just feel it will win the best Oscar in its category because it should.
Well, hopefully, if we're even in that conversation, that would be incredible.
Yeah, and I think you'll be in that conversation.
Thank you. And I think it'll raise awareness for the film. And that would be awesome to be in that conversation.
Talk to me a little, because as with the animation for me, it was also the score was really, I mean, to say additive just sounds pejorative, but I mean, it was so additive. Like it stayed with me. It's haunting and moving.
Mindy, we got really lucky. I mean, the moment we met Young Ran, the animation director, she knew exactly the style that we wanted. And the moment we sat down with Lindsay Marcus, our composer, whose work I had loved and admired, but I'd never gotten the opportunity to work with her and now can't imagine not work with her. The moment her first compositions were the compositions of the film, even so much so that Michael and I had to sort of run around the block to come back to them, but she just got it.
I believe it.
We had to sort of circle them and we were like, well, and they were immaculate. They were perfect. And that really was her first impressions of the film. And she was very moved by it. So what came out of her was really sort of like cathartic and just raw and beautiful and haunting.
Yes. Well, I have to say, obviously, I have never lost a child to a shooting. In talking to Michael about it a little bit, I said, I too am also very fascinated with grief. I have always warned my friends that when my parents pass, I will not be okay. Mm-hmm. Truly. And certain kinds, I feel like we as human beings, the same way we're loving all the time, we're grieving all the time over different things. So I'm a little mildly obsessed with it, I would say, as well. This movie just makes you confront your own grief about little and big things. It's so, to me, what art is supposed to be about, that it's the literal thing of what it's about. But it also, if it's good, makes you think and feel about things that you didn't think were right up there, ready to be expressed and thought about and talked about. And so it's magnificent, Will. Really.
Thank you.
I just told Michael too, just bravo, exclamation point, whatever.
Thank you.
I'm really excited for you guys.
Thank you so much. I think one of the things that has really moved us is, you know, the film is about the loss of a child to gun violence, but really so many people have come up to me who have lost a parent, who've lost a friend, that the movie is really just about loss and grief and what can we do in the face of that pain. And normally not a lot, but what we can do is be there for one another and that we can show up and meet each other and see each other and connect with one another. And that sort of like ability to know that like that's empowering, that when we do go through that, we need to be there for one another. That's been so moving that people have said that to me.
Yes.
It's just been great. I've been obsessed. I like keep writing about grief in one form or another. I've had a lot of loss in my life. And
well, the other thing about the film, I think that was so moving is that it is almost easier sometimes, however difficult, to not share it, to break off or, you know, do it solo, even if it's to the detriment of a relationship. But really so much more can come out of just staying together.
Totally.
In community or with a person. Yeah. So anyway, amazing, Will. Amazing.
You know, Michael and I were so inspired by these men and women who've lost children and their ability to stand up for this cause and get up in the morning and keep going. It's just so heartbreaking, but also so inspiring that we tried to do our best to create some sort of elegy around it.
And you did it.
Thank you.
How long did it take you to make the movie from like inception to where you are now?
Honestly, we spent a year on the script, which was only 12 pages long because we knew that it had to be perfect because we wouldn't have a lot of money to animate.
Sure.
And we didn't. So whatever, it's like an indie film. Yeah. Like you only get to do it once. And sort of the imperfections of the movie, they sort of add to what it is. It shouldn't feel perfect. We're not going for this bright Pixar-y 3D version. We're going for something that feels real and worn in and lived in. So that actually was an advantage stylistically. But the actual process of filmmaking was not long. It was 3 or 4 months. Not bad. 3.5 months maybe. But, you know, writing the movie and then raising the money and getting everyone replaced takes years.
Yes. Yeah. So were you on the Disney Plus project when quarantine hit? Were you in the middle of something? Right.
Yeah.
You were in the middle of that and one other thing, correct? Well, knowing you 10, but.
Yes. I have a couple TV shows I produced for Cheetah, but my writing life has been so full and I'm currently on my, I had a call with Disney this morning, handed in my second draft of Challenger Deep. I'm doing an adaptation of Neil Schusterman's novel about a kid. Yeah, but it's about a kid named, it's a huge hit in the YA world. It's about a kid who's, facing and living with a mental illness. And half of the book takes place in the real world where he's trying to hide his mental illness. And the other half of the book takes place in his brain where he's sailing across the sea of mental illness towards the deepest part of the ocean, Challenger Deep. So the book is really cool and beautiful. And it's about an important thing. It's about kids, you know, living with mental illness and facing them. And it's about suicide and it's about how we overcome that. And I was so inspired by the novel. And Disney's been a great partner. And I don't know if they're going to make it, but I hope they do. And it's all looking really, really positive. So
I hope they do too.
Total honor to write this story.
Wow. All right. Well, I just want to thank you so, so much. First of all, before I get rid of you, I do have to say, one of the last times you were on social media, probably, did you post a picture of your sister with Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, my mom's a lawyer.
Cool.
So Ruth's always kind of been a person also that in my family, between my mom, my sister and I, anyway, it was very moving to see that.
Notorious.
Yeah. And I wondered how she's doing, your sister, as far as.
She's fighting the good fight. My sister Bridget is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Michigan, and we're very proud of her. And just, she was an extraordinary public defender. And then she was the youngest professor ever at Yale Law School, and then became the Dean of the Law School at the University of Michigan, and then became a justice, and then became the Chief Justice Supreme Court. And she's just been such an inspiration to me and Mary, my other sister, who's a phenomenal actress.
Yes.
And she's really led the way for our family. She's just an extraordinary human being, just with like also a very big brain, but an even bigger heart.
Yeah, I guess because I love and like my mother so much. She's one of my most favorite people in the world. It's just another thing. It just moved me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you have a member of your family like that.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, I just think it makes me better that I am the daughter of her. And I wonder if you felt the same way being the brother of her, you know?
110%. I can't brag about her enough.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Okay, great.
From an outsider standpoint, the McCormick family has a lot of like, you guys really need to get your stuff together. They're not really pulling your weight over there.
Yeah, they're not doers. I know.
Yeah.
Well, just sitting around all day. Like,
we're slackers.
Like, put something on your resume.
Yeah.
But it was enormous pressure having these two older sisters. I mean, pressure that I put on myself, but I idolized them when I was little. They were like superheroes to me and still are. But when you're a little kid, I mean, they were so smart and they were great swimmers and they were great sisters. But I always felt like, oh, man, this is going to be tough. I don't want to be like the runt of the litter here.
Yes.
And I am, but it's a great litter.
And then there's Will. Oh, no. Yeah. I'm here to attest to that. That's a deep, dark no. Will, I adore you copious amounts. Thank you so, so much for just coming on and gabbing. And you inspire me just all the time. I appreciate it so much.
You inspire me. I adore you. And I can't wait to see you in real life again one day. And I
Same.
Just feel connected to you. And I'm so grateful that you're doing this and giving voices to artists, and you're a superstar. Christian, it's a joy to meet you on the computer. I loved being with you, and I hope I get to have dinner with you guys one day when all this is over.
Hopefully.
It will happen.
Yeah.
Great.
So our listeners and our viewers know, head to MondaysWithMindy.com. We'll have lots of information about the upcoming film and his other projects. Even though he's not totally on social media, there is some social media that you can follow. You'll notice the handle over on his video is for the film. So we're going to continue to help him promote that to get the word out there. And once that becomes available to the public to see, on a much grander scale, we'll make sure to add that link as well. So head to MondaysWithMindy.com to check out the podcast, the YouTube of this, and of course, all the stuff that Will's been keeping busy with. Once again, Will, thank you very much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, Will McCormick.
Thank you so much. I had so much fun.